This podcast is brought to you by Lanco Group, your business partner for engineering solutions. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
And welcome to the English Football Show brought to you by FNR. Massive show coming up, big 60 minutes following, I guess, a week that was like no other we have ever had on the show, and I guess in for some time in English football. Obviously, Liverpool clinching their first ever Premier League title in their history, place them back on the perch of English football, and also their 19th Division One trophy. Joining me, as always, is Christopher Chrysostomo, Tim Spiliotis, and the very, very happy Nicholas Hughes. Obviously, Nick, I'll happily get you to kick it off. How you're feeling, how the last few days have been for you, the weekend. Obviously, Liverpool haven't really had to play at all, but still been probably one of the best weekends you've had as a Liverpool supporter.
Yeah, for sure. It was a fantastic morning, but it's funny in that the feeling probably is only half of what it could be, given that obviously we've known that this has been coming for months, due to Liverpool's dominance in the season. And I would have rather that we get to play for it rather than have it for us at Stamford Bridge as it was. But of course, it's a league title. No one's complaining, that's for sure. And it really is a special moment. Ever since the final whistle, I've been on social media seeing all the reaction, seeing little snippets of the players' celebrations and interviews and lapping it all up. Something I thought I'd never see for a period of time, obviously having waited all my lifetime to see it. But can only think now of what more is to come with this squad and this manager, the sheer dominance that they've shown in the English game in the last year, and look, even last season was so fantastic as well. But yes, very, very special and something I'll never forget as a fan. Just hope that I can get over to Liverpool soon and see the champions at Anfield and hope the fans over there can get the parade and be able to celebrate properly.
Well, yeah, obviously, you know, the first title in some time, but the team to do it ever so early as well as at the same time ever so late. Obviously, first team to ever win it with 7 games to spare, but at the same time, when you've got a season starting in August and win it by late June, you're somehow broken both ends of the spectrum on those records. But obviously, yeah, that Chelsea's win, I'm assuming you probably would have been watching, as a few of us might have been. But we have seen it for some time in the last few years, especially some of the best title wins, like we had Leicester's as well, where it was won in other games. I guess for both Chris and Tim as well, looking on, how do you think the emotions can also run through fans and Liverpool fans when, yeah, your team isn't quite playing, but the title is won while you're sitting at home still?
Well, last year, it was a goal line clearance that prevented Liverpool from winning the title. A year later, Manchester City again, and it's a goal line clearance, which wasn't a clearance, that won Liverpool the title. So many different correlations between what's happened in the past and what happened this week. Even if you look at, you know, Liverpool beat Crystal Palace 2013, they drew to Crystal Palace and that ended their hopes of the title. But they deserve it. They've been the best team all year. I think for a Manchester United fan, it's not great to see Liverpool win the title. But I guess it's a way where we knew they were going to win the title for 7 months now, that the fans around the world have got around to the fact that Liverpool are going to win the title. So it doesn't hurt as much as, say, Liverpool winning it as Aguero won the Premier League title for Manchester City in 2012. But for Liverpool, it's a great achievement. They've been one of the best teams ever in Premier League history. And it'll be interesting to see what they do in the off-season to ensure that they create a dynasty and this isn't a one-off.
Yeah, I'm personally very happy that they've finally, officially won it. I would have thought it would have been very, very unfair if the season was null and voided. And I take great delight looking on social media that people saying they weren't deserving of it because they were clearly the best team of the competition. And I've got a Liverpool top on as well, but some Beatles. But yeah, well done, Nick. And I'm glad that you can finally have the official celebration now.
The one thing with the celebrations, and we've seen a lot of celebrations in Liverpool, and Jurgen Klopp came out today and said that he asked the fans to stop celebrating and return to the isolation period because we're still in the COVID-19. This now is a reason people who were against football returning would draw on this and say that now with the celebrations, it's going to cause a spike in COVID-19, and this could prevent fans from returning to football sooner than later as well.
Yeah, it's certainly a tough position to be in. And given the circumstances, you'd think if maybe any of the top, top sides had won it, say maybe United, a City, Chelsea, they probably wouldn't be as keen on celebrating, would be more held back. But for Liverpool's circumstances, it is very, very hard to do so. I can understand where they're coming from, but I can also understand the people on the other side of the fence saying, you know, the dangers and the fact that, you know, there might be no title for next season if the celebrations go ahead. It is an interesting one, but the whole, I guess, 2020 second half of the campaign or last third of the campaign is going to be an interesting one to look back on. How many will remember it as the season where Liverpool won or the season that was interrupted by this pandemic? But I think going off the celebrations and seeing what it means to so many of the Reds fans, that this won't be a season with an asterisk at all. I think this will be the season that Liverpool dominated once everything has passed in maybe a few years' time, who knows. But for me, yeah, looking at how everything has panned out over the last few days and some of the reactions, I think this isn't going to be a season with an asterisk at all.
Yeah, the asterisk conversation has just come from bitter fans that can't accept it, that Liverpool have been, by a country mile, the best team in the league and deserving champions. There is absolutely no way anyone with anyone can try and say that they have an unbiased opinion that Liverpool wouldn't have won the league anyway, and you know, and that it would have been fair to null and void it. But I think that's probably a discussion for another day. People can say what they want about an asterisk, but I think the most important people that know that there isn't an asterisk is the players and the staff. They know exactly the achievement that they've achieved, if that's a use of the English language there. They'll no doubt carry that on. And like you said, Chris, they'll look to strengthen. I know Klopp said, they're targeting areas of the team they're looking to strengthen, but no major signings are going to be imminent. And why would there be a need for a major signing when in so many different positions, they've got, if not the best player in the world, then you'd think a top three or a top five player in the world in most positions in their starting 11. So if they target depth, a couple more signings, like you said, you mentioned the word dynasty, and I'll mention that a bit later as well when we get onto our talking points from the weekend. But we could be about to see a Fergie-esque, you know, three-peat, and the trophies coming in. Obviously, Klopp's still got another 4 years on his deal, set to expire in 2024. I think it's probably widely assumed that that'll be a goodbye after that. He doesn't usually... This will be the longest he's ever stayed at a club. I think he did 7 years at Mainz and Dortmund. And so by the time 2024 comes around, that'll be 9 years. And then who knows what happens there, you know? In 4 years' time, all these star players will be over 30 years old. So maybe that'll be a time for another mini rebuild and another direction. But for now, I think and we spoke at length about this last Friday on At Home with FNR as well. I think at the very least, Liverpool have to be targeting one trophy every season for the next 4 or 5 years. You know, whether that be a cup, but obviously the league and the Champions League are going to be the priorities. And yeah, I think yeah, by the time Klopp leaves, certainly at least one more Premier League, probably one more Champions League will be coming into Anfield. And it'll be very interesting to see what happens going forward, because being poor for so long, you look at like Suarez and Alonso and those kind of players that have left, Liverpool are now that draw card to that big club in world football to really think why on earth would Salah or Mane or Van Dijk ever consider leaving.
Well, the thing is with that, Nick, is those players, I can't see them going to a Real Madrid and performing as they do at Liverpool, because the system suits those players. And I don't think outside of the system, those players single-handedly are, you know, the top three players in the world. I think that the system makes them that good. And I think that's why we'll see Mohamed Salah and Sadio Mane stay at Liverpool, whereas Suarez was an out-and-out superstar and the best striker in the world when he moved on to Barcelona. I think as it is now, this team is set up perfectly and the system makes them as good as they are. And talk about rebuilding and dynasties, we might touch on that talking point now then. They've got so many young players that can come into this team and they're the backup players, but they also need to bring in a few more just so you keep everyone on their toes. And that's what Sir Alex always did at United, and why they were able to create a dynasty, because if you keep bringing in players, it'll make everyone work harder, but you've got to ensure that they are the right players and not players that will change the culture at the club. And I think that's, if Liverpool can continue doing that, I don't know if that, so I still don't know if Liverpool will target the out and out superstars or whether they'll get that just the tier just below and then turn them into superstars as they have with Alisson and Salah and Mane, instead of going for a Kylian Mbappe. I still don't know if they will be able to do that. And whatever they do, they're going to be successful with Jurgen Klopp there as manager.
I'd have to say, you know, when you talk about signings, we saw how little Liverpool spent this season on Minamino, who, yes, hasn't had the flying role that they thought he was going to have. He's still young, and I don't think he probably should have had the expectations he did when he joined from Leipzig. But I think that he's been absolutely fantastic in just playing his role, and he's at his age and the position he is. I think he will smoothly fit into the system that Jurgen Klopp's trying to bring in. And he's the type of signings that Liverpool need. Like you both have said, they don't need a superstar to add to this team and perhaps change that chemistry. They just need players pressing for those positions and playing when they can. And, you know, when it does come to a League Cup game or that midweek game where one or two players are going to have to be rested, they're eyeing for that spot on the weekend and for future championship positions. So they're just going to play the best they can, and that really gives the best depth that you possibly can as a manager and as a club. So I think signings like Minamino, whilst so far haven't looked as great as I think Klopp would have and a lot of Liverpool fans would have liked, I still think those signings are the ones that have built Liverpool into where they are now. We'll quickly move on, as much as I know Nick would love to have the whole hour dedicated to Liverpool, and we will touch on the Reds in a bit more, as we said, in our talking points from the weekend. But some Premier League action on the weekend, some FA Cup action. This morning's game, Palace and Burnley, both sides were tied at 42 points heading into this morning's kickoff. Ben Mee header, the only score to separate Burnley and collect all 3 points. The Clarets now move into eighth position on the table with 32 games played, one more than a number of the sides around them. But the 1-0 victory also adds a 13th clean sheet to Nick Pope's season, who is now the outright leader between the players between the sticks. But this game, obviously a lot going on in the last week, and even with FA Cup action, there was only, I think, 3 or 4 Premier League fixtures. But this one was certainly one, and when you talk about the position of both clubs, the massive one in their respects.
Yeah, it's a big win for Burnley and a big two wins, really, after the hiding that they were handed by Man City. Obviously, 5-0 at the Etihad last week. Two good, solid 1-0 wins away from home, both against teams of a similar level. Obviously, Watford have been playing... they were at home against Watford, not away. Obviously, Watford have been playing below their level, but quality-wise on paper, they are still a decent team. And a Crystal Palace side that up until a hiding of their own against Liverpool were in fantastic form, obviously with the hiatus in between, but I think it was four wins in a row, and they'd come out of the restart with a good 2-0 win against Bournemouth. And yes, it's a great result for Burnley to get themselves back up into eighth, and all of a sudden they're now looking quite likely, I would say, for a European berth. I think Sheffield United is slipping further and further away. And if they can reel in Tottenham, they're even only 4 points away from Manchester United. Obviously, I think the gulf in class and the difference in form will only extend that gap rather than Burnley being able to reel in the Red Devils. But a great opportunity for the Clarets. And you can only think, with a lot of talk about Sean Dyche's future in the past week, you can only think what happens when he leaves, because he's done such fantastic work with that side. And even for him, I'm not entirely sure where he thinks he's going to go, because looking at the table, he's not going to any of the teams above Burnley in the table. He's probably not going to any teams as far down as 13th as well. Maybe if the Newcastle takeover comes in, he goes to Newcastle. But the work he's done over the past few years getting Burnley into Europe, he'll definitely go down as a legend at that club. He'll look to do the same and get them back into continental competition for next season.
Look, I don't think the new Newcastle owners want Sean Dyche as their new manager, spending $100 million on Nick Pope and maybe a Tarkowski or something. But I think it's the perfect club for him. They play the football that he wants to play. And there was talk maybe a few years ago about possibly going to Everton. But now Carlo Ancelotti there, I think Everton are on that foreign path of progress in the club. It'll also be interesting to see what happens to Eddie Howe. He's another one that's been talked about over the years of where he would go, and there's always been high hopes for him. And if Bournemouth do get relegated, where does he end up? But that's something that we'll have to find out once it ends. And you know, even a big club in the second division might be someone that in the future a Dyche or Eddie Howe look at, like say Aston Villa get relegated. That's a team that I can see them going to. Those big clubs, not a big club that's fighting for a European place in the Premier League.
Yeah, it's a funny term, this new challenge. Obviously, Dyche, like you said, he could take a new challenge in being, you know, getting a Fulham or an Aston Villa back up to the Premier League, obviously, providing that Villa get relegated and Fulham don't get promoted, but a club like that and doing a similar job to what he did with Burnley and sort of building them from the ground up and then progressing them through as a long-term project. But yeah, he's not going to the big six, that's for sure. And then you look at the likes of Leicester, Wolves, Sheffield United, Everton, like you said, Southampton with Hasenhüttl, their managers are all very much fixed in place. And the other thing I could think of is the England job, and that's probably unlikely, because you'd expect England now to really kick on and have some good performances in major competitions. But on the pitch again, a great result for Burnley. And one that they'll look to run with, they've got Sheffield United next week, which is a big game for them to distance themselves from the Blades and continue to chase that European football. They've got quite a handy run in, the Clarets. West Ham after that, only really Liverpool and Wolves are games that you wouldn't necessarily back them to win. They finish with Norwich and Brighton, so a big opportunity for them to get back in Europe.
Moving on now to our FA Cup reviews. Massive round of quarterfinals. Manchester United's 2-1 win over 10 men. Norwich, thanks for a 118th minute Harry Maguire goal. Skin of the teeth stuff from the Red Devils. Dani Ceballos' 91st minute strike also hushed Sheffield United's comeback. David McGoldrick with the late, I think, 87th minute goal to equalise. But a massive win for Arsenal as they move on to the semis. Chelsea defeating the Foxes despite a poor performance. We saw some scenes from Frank Lampard at halftime talking to his men. Did not seem happy with the first 45 minutes, but got through as well. And then Man City obviously cruised past Newcastle 2-0 at St. James's Park with goals to Kevin De Bruyne, Raheem Sterling. So we've got two London and two Manchester sides into the semi-finals, with United to host Chelsea at Wembley on the 19th of July against Australian time, and then Arsenal and City play the following day. But for Tim, Gunners getting a win, obviously in the fashion they did as well. A little bit of drama and a little bit of, I guess, get the heart racing is always good stuff when it ends up with moving on to the next stage.
Yeah, well, it was a decent start by the Gunners. And second half, I thought it was all Sheffield United and I was expecting the equaliser to come, and it did come. But then when Ceballos scored the winner, amazing scenes. But yeah, you know, it was decent to get a result because in the past they would have lost clashes like these and they would have been eliminated. But to get the result and progress the next round, even though they're playing City, which is a hard match to come. But I think if they can somehow push a result, they're a good chance of winning it. And it's laughable to think about that given how bad they've been this season. But the FA Cup has been the one competition where they've actually done all right in recent seasons.
Yeah, I guess Chris.
No, I think it's sad that we all agree that Manchester City are probably going to win the FA Cup again. I think it's become an irrelevant competition in the last few years just by the fact that City have dominated for so long. They've won how many in a row now since Chelsea beat United two or three years ago?
The League Cup as well. They've just dominated those domestic competitions.
So we might as well give it to them now.
I'd have to say, with, I guess, the Premier League title over, obviously Manchester United is still pushing for European place, and yes, City will be quite comfortable with it where they're sit. But Chelsea, I think, with how they've started in the Premier League, will potentially look at the FA Cup semi, obviously against United, who's trailing them in the league. I think I'd be backing in Chelsea in that first game. Yeah. And really putting it to City in the final, because I think that while United still probably have more than one focus by the time these semi-finals come around, Chelsea probably look at their own position in the top four or top three now.
United's beaten them on the last four occasions.
Have done well, especially when you obviously go back to the first day. But games at Wembley, so hard to predict. And obviously, while we saw what happened between City and Arsenal in the Premier League's return, as much as I would think City could move past them, you certainly can't rule out Arsenal. I think Nicolas Pepe has been fantastic for them, but it's probably at the other end of the ground they need to focus on. But at the moment, I'd be saying it's been really between. I probably would be tipping Chelsea ahead of United, as well as United have matched up against the Blues. I just think that at the moment, with everything that's going on and where that United have to focus at the moment, I'd like to think that Chelsea might just have that above them. But before we go to the ad break, our talking points from the weekend, boys, I guess we'll kick off with Tim, because yours is in relation to Liverpool and the fact that
can align Tim's and Nick's together because they're both Liverpool.
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll kick off Tim, or we'll get you to perhaps relay into Nick's, but Liverpool looking as strong as they ever have following the hiatus.
Yeah, a lot of people would have thought that given that long break, they would have dropped a few games in this period, but a 4-0 win over Crystal Palace, I still think they're as strong as ever, and that break would have no impact on their form, and I reckon that they could even reach 100 points by the end of the season.
Yeah, it was a disappointing nil-all draw with Everton in the first game back, but honestly, from an unbiased point of view, that 4-0 win against Crystal Palace was one of, if not possibly the best performance I've ever seen by a football team in recent memory. I think Palace had three shots from probably about no closer than 25 yards, didn't touch the ball in Liverpool's box, which is the first time since Opta started collating that data in 2008. Liverpool just utterly dismantled them. Talk about Crystal Palace not even laying a glove. They weren't even in the same ring as Liverpool were. It was pure destruction. And exactly, Tim, it was the statement that they needed to assert themselves out of the break and show that obviously they're the worthy champions and that they're still well on their game. I guess that segues into, I touched on it before, I won't ramble on too much further, but yeah, I think, again, trying to be as unbiased as I can, I think Liverpool are really primed to start a dynasty in English football now and clean up some silverware in the next few years, which is, I think us Liverpool fans are rejoicing to the heavens that we're finally actually able to utter those words in the same sentence rather than, you know, trying to fight to stay in the top half as we were 10 or so years ago. I just think that Jurgen Klopp is incredible. I think he's the best manager in the world. And like I said before, I think you look at Robertson, Alexander-Arnold, Van Dijk, Alisson, I think Fabinho, I rate incredibly highly. I reckon those five are, if not the best in the world in their position, like I said before, definitely top three in the world. The front three is incredible. And you've got the likes of Henderson and Wijnaldum, et cetera, that have had fantastic seasons. And to think we haven't seen the best of Naby Keita and Minamino, like you said, Mitch, Oxlade-Chamberlain is still so handy. And obviously the opportunity to strengthen that further, I think the team will only get better. And after that, I think as a bold call, I think the team to follow that dynasty is going to be Chelsea. I think you look at Werner and Ziyech coming in, and obviously there's plenty of rumours about Havertz and Chilwell and whoever else. But what I've seen from them this season has been a pleasant surprise for in terms of how impressive they have been in Lampard's first season. I think a lot of us thought they'd miss out on European football, but they've been in the top four basically all season. They've played some fantastic stuff, and you look at the likes of Pulisic and Mount and Abraham, etc. All those young players that we harp on about, they're only going to continue to grow as they get more experience and get older. And if they're adding the caliber of player like Ziyech and Werner, I reckon they win a title before Man City win their next one. I think if Liverpool dominate in the next few years, I think then Chelsea are going to be ready to come right behind them and overtake City as that chasing team to Liverpool and give it a few years. I think they'll be right on top. Obviously, Manchester United are developing as well. City, you can obviously never count out with Guardiola, with all the money they have and the quality of their squad as it is. But looking at Chelsea from afar, they have been fantastic this season. I think Timo Werner is going to take over the league. I think he's just going to be electric. And going forward, if they keep adding those players, then the sky really is the limit for them under Lampard.
I think it's going to be even harder than ever to create a dynasty, any one side to dominate, because there's so much money involved and it's not a top three anymore, not even a top two as it was back when it was United and Arsenal dominating during the 90s. I see Chelsea challenging starting next year. They just need to fix up their defence now that they've got Werner and Ziyech as well. They need to get another left back and possibly another centre back, and they're challenging with Reece James starting on at right back instead of Azpilicueta, and maybe even a goalkeeper, depending on how Kepa performs for the rest of the campaign. And I think United as well, they're just a couple of players short from seriously challenging the top four. Well, firstly the top four and then the top two week in, week out. And maybe just a bit, they need to play with a bit more tempo in their game, and then they're up there with those few other teams. And even Wolves, they perform so well against the top four. If they can improve their performances against those sides around them and just below them, I think they're every chance of challenging for that top four place as well.
Well, moving on as well to our next talking point, I'll get on to mine, because mine is also talking about, I guess, the future, next few seasons to come. I think Southampton, not necessarily for the whole year, I don't think they've been the most consistent side, but the way they're set up under Ralph Hasenhüttl since he's come in, seems to be more like they're moving into this new era of holding on to these players and building something, rather than being that feeder club we have seen for some time under a number of managers. And I think you look at, obviously, Danny Ings leading from the front, another brace on the weekend in their 3-1 win over Watford. But the fact that this side is relying on so much of their youth You talk about Valerie, Che Adams, yes, hasn't been the player they wanted, but still so young. Obafemi and Gineppo have been solid in this side while at such a young age. Angus Gunn has been a great pickup whilst he's only playing the 10 games. I think he's one to look at for the future a bit more. Holberg's still only, I think, 24. Bednarek as well. Solid with Vestergaard at centre-back. But this whole team, I think, is slowly just setting up to be one of those sides that is going to hold on to some players, perhaps look into January transfer or the transfer windows and perhaps look at collecting one or two more key players. For me, yeah, I think with Dennings having 18 goals and still only 27 years of age, plenty of good football ahead of him. And they currently sit just 5 points off the top seven. So I think they're prime position for the next few years. And then seeing what we've seen, I think this season from them, absolutely fantastic. Chris, your talking point, few struggles for some of those top smaller sides since the return.
Yeah, so the sides like Leicester and Sheffield United, I think that the break came at a horrible time for them, and we've seen them struggle on their return to the Premier League. Sheffield knocked out of the FA Cup against Arsenal and 1 point from their first two games. And then Leicester as well, they look like a side that's now under pressure from the likes of Manchester United and Wolves, because I think Chelsea will remain in the top four just based on their performances and the teams that they have coming up. But for Leicester, it's a struggle, and it's going to be great to see the last game of the year, the last match day, because we have Manchester United against Leicester City and Chelsea against Wolves. I think that's what we're going to be watching. I'm going to have my laptop and I'm going to have a Chromecast onto the screen as well, the two games at the same time.
Well, we absolutely
super Sunday. Can't wait for that one.
Absolutely massive fixtures coming. Obviously, plenty of midweek fixtures in the Championship coming up this week, which we will be talking about on the other side of the ad break. We'll head to that now with an absolute action-packed second half of the hour coming to you from the English Football Show on Football Nation Radio. Welcome back to the English Football Show, brought to you by Football Nation Radio. And we're into the EFL segment now in our action-packed second half hour, bringing you to 1 p.m. Melbourne time. And a massive morning, obviously, for Northampton fans in League 2, clinching promotion to League 1. Dominant 4-0 display over Exeter at Wembley this morning. Goals to Ryan Watson, Callum Morton. In the first half, then doubled by Hoskins and Williams in the second half. A huge morning for Northampton, who returned to the third division after, I think it was 2 or 3 years now. And for Exeter, unfortunately, their tough runs of playoff finals continue. Their third loss in the playoff final in the last 4 years. But a massive game was expected and was given to us at Wembley this morning with the Cobblers' fantastic outfit once again, running in some great form since the return. Boys, how did we look at the game, get up early this morning? And I guess, in one way, shocked by Northampton, but at the same time, going off their semi-final playoffs, the form was certainly warranted from their run.
Yeah, we had a great start to post-COVID lockdown Northampton with some great results. And they did a lot of training on the training field before these playoff finals, and great performances all up and back into League One. We'll be interesting to see how well they go. It'll be a smaller period of time to sign new players, and it'll be interesting to see how competitive they are to the new season.
Yeah, I'm spewing I didn't back myself last week when we were giving our predictions, because I had a gut feeling that they'd come up and provide that shock. But alas, I didn't trust myself. But no, it's a terrific win, and obviously it's probably a simplistic thing to say that Exeter's defending was poor, given that they've conceded four goals. But really, all four of them were more or less avoidable, and the fact that on each occasion the keeper in the back four turning and waving their arm to the linesman, and I'm thinking, well, don't ask the linesman for help. Why don't you have a look at yourselves and defended a little bit better, because really a couple of them were just scrambles in the box, simple balls in behind it that could have been cut out. But a fantastic win for Northampton, and one that you hope would really kick them on going to League One. But I'm not so sure. I think they will struggle, obviously, given the fact that they have come from seventh place in the in League Two. Sorry, how's the words there? The way that they've come up as the underdogs, I think, and obviously, like you said, the fact that they're not going to have probably, obviously, there's not huge wads of cash to be spent in League One anyway, but given the climate, they're not going to have the money and the time to really look at strengthening the squad. So I think they will struggle. I do hope they can stay up, because it is unfortunate to see clubs like that are almost stuck in limbo, that keep yo-yoing, a bit like Rotherham, that sort of swap between the Championship and League One every season. But yeah, it's a great day for Northampton. I think they missed the memo on the socially distant trophy lift. They were all spraying the champagne and jumping all over each other, but all for it. Good on them. They'll be waking up with a few heavy heads after some celebrations, I'm sure. And yeah, like I said, hopefully they can make use of it in League One, but we'll have to wait and see.
It's always interesting that the team that wins the promotion final usually gets compared to the team that did the same 12 months ago. And I think you look at Tranmere Rovers, didn't have the League One season they were hoping for, and that probably didn't help the fact they lose James Norwood to Ipswich before they had a chance to show what they could have done in League One. And I think one thing that is going to benefit the Cobblers this season and Keith Kill's side is the fact they don't have a standout star like a Norwood. I think Charlie Good, their captain, I don't see him doing the same as what Norwood did and moving on, whilst he's probably what I've seen from their last few games, and this is where a lot of attention comes from League One clubs when they look at their performances at the dire end of the season. I don't see one player moving on. Obviously, Callum Morton is on loan from West Brom, and the performances he's put out do show a lot of promise for someone at his age, but he did say that there could be some interest in staying with Northampton. That'd be massive for them when you do talk about how they could possibly perform in the third division. So that'll be interesting. But back to the game itself, can't say that, I guess, Exeter didn't have their chances. Obviously, going down to 10 men, 60 minutes in, a shocking tackle from Dean Moxie. Obviously, 100% frustration from how the game was being played out. But the fact that, you know, Nicky Adams goes down 30 minutes in, arguably the most damaging player for Northampton, and that really could have opened things up, but a minute in and it's already 2-0 come about 30 minutes. So they really did well losing a star player, and I think that the perseverance really did pay off. But there was a number of chances, you must say, for Exeter. I think Ron Bowman had one, just stuffed it up with his first touch, and then second and third, and I think was able to cover quite easily. But this was a fantastic win for Northampton. And I think, yeah, quite deserving with how they must have, like you guys said, must have built up and trained during the hiatus and in the time they had. And I think Keith Keogh's done a fantastic job.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I called it last week, actually, Northampton. Because going by the form they had in the previous match, you know, you would have thought they would have brought it through. But, yeah, an amazing win by them. And you just never know. You said before you can base it on the previous team's form in the next season. But you never know. They could actually have a good run next season. And, you know, 4-0, it gives a sign of how well they can actually play.
All right, now, obviously, with League Two playoffs wrapped up and the way the season schedule has panned out with all the events of 2020, that does open now. League One playoffs start this week, Saturday morning, 2:30 a.m. Australian Eastern Time, is Portsmouth versus Oxford as the first game, and then 4:40 a.m. Next couple hours, pretty much as soon as the game's over, moving into Fleetwood versus Wickham. Two massive games, obviously, in the circumstances. But we'll start with Portsmouth and Oxford, the higher-placed one of the higher place playoffs. Interesting two sides, very highly touted. Obviously, we had Oxford's great push to end before the whole coronavirus took over. Five straight wins and really ensured their spot if they obviously had known that events were going to take the toll they did. They've certainly timed it well with their five wins, ensuring their top six finish. Carl Robinson's been have been fantastic, up and down. Certainly, their form hasn't really been as consistent as they have hoped. But coming up against a Portsmouth side who undefeated in the last 19 home games, but say what you will about home ground advantage at the moment with no fans in stadiums. How are we seeing this one play out between the two sides?
Yeah, they were sort of a late bloomer, Oxford, and they really hit that run of form around the sort of winter time and getting up into fourth. Interesting, looking at the table, the fourth, fifth, and sixth, Oxford, Portsmouth, and Fleetwood somehow all managed to end up on 75.43 after the points per game calculations. I think these ones are incredibly difficult to pick because League One was just so close. I think when as the table stood, as of the last game that was played, you got three teams on 60 and three on 59. And the way that the cups work in those lower divisions as well mean that so many teams have played different amounts of games. So it was so difficult to predict. You think even if Peterborough or Sunderland were to be in those playoffs, you'd back either of them to make it all the way to the final and gain promotion as well. I think Oxford and Portsmouth is funny. I think they're probably the two better teams, maybe Wickham. But I think Oxford and Portsmouth could very easily have been the final. I hope Portsmouth edge it because I'd love to see them get back up into the Championship and then into the Premier League, obviously after the administration in 08 or 2010 or whenever that was. So whether it's more so out of hope than a prediction, I'll say Portsmouth to go through with that one. And I think Wickham should be able to deal with Harry Souter's Fleetwood Town.
I like to call him Joey Barton's Fleetwood Town. And I said earlier, a couple months ago now, that I would love to see Joey Barton and Adebayo Akinfenwa have a punch on the sidelines. And maybe we might get to see that. It's like that wrestling, Tim, you know, when you've got the one loud mouth against the big wrestler, like a Hulk Hogan or someone, that's what it would be like. But for me, it would be Portsmouth should get over the line against Oxford. I think they've got the better squad. And it's good to see them up there after a poor start to the season. And there were a lot of questions about Kenny Jackett, whether he was the man to lead them up into the Championship. And then in the other game, I think Wickham have had the better season out of the two sides. They did have a form dip late into the campaign, but they've been strong all season. And I don't think anyone would have expected them to make the playoff final at the start of the campaign.
Yeah, I think Portsmouth, they should get the job done in that first match. And then I would love to see Wickham progress to the next round. Just because of where they've been in previous seasons and how they've found themselves in this position, it would be good to see them get promoted.
Yeah, I think that I agree with Nick in saying these are probably the two strongest outfits. I think while Wickham have had the higher finish between the four sides, they're just a team I haven't been able to buy into this year. Gareth Ainsworth continues to defy anything I can say about the club, though. But with squad he's got, he's done an absolutely fantastic job and deserves the credit. But yeah, I would have thought that whoever wins this, I'd like to think gets promotion overall. I think
I'd love to see Akinfenwa in the Championship.
It would be good. It'd be interesting to see if we can move up if he stays down in League One and just decides to abide in the third division. But like you both said as well, both these sides have had interesting seasons. Obviously Portsmouth very slow starters and have really been able to turn things around, with Oxford really good early, started a little bit around Christmas, and then when it came to the January transfer window pretty much looked to as if they had checked out and were trying to plan for the future. You know, lose Shannon Baptiste and Fosu Henry, and the club kind of just looked as if they were saying that planning for next year rather than the potential future of this year. But, you know, I think that they've done a fantastic job, and Carl Robinson has got that run perfectly timed to get them where they are. So I'm actually going to be tipping Oxford a high-scoring draw this weekend. And then come Tuesday morning's game, there'll be the team having a place at Wembley. But moving into the next fixture as well, Fleetwood versus Wickham. And like I said, that'll be following the conclusion of Portsmouth versus Oxford. Fleetwood, hometown, so the game at Highbury on Saturday, and then moving over to Wickham on Tuesday morning. But similar to Portsmouth, Fleetwood had have had a strong home run, but we can't really take much home ground advantage into the current circumstances that we are playing football under at the moment. So they had gone 12 games undefeated in their last 12 home games, which is a great run for them. And Wickham's away form, certainly not strong. So read into this what you can, but it's their first game in, I think, 120 days. So we'll certainly have to see how this all pans out. But boys, like I said, I haven't really backed Wickham in as well as they have done this year. And I am going to be tipping Fleetwood with a strong start, perhaps a Paddy Madden brace to claim the first leg and perhaps be too strong enough for Wickham to come back in the second leg. But how else are we tipping Fleetwood versus Wickham over the both legs?
Well, if you want to look at the stats, even though Wickham finished third, like they've got a higher points per game total, but they have a lower points total. So if you want to factor that in, you can sit Fleetwood. But I think Wickham might actually get the job done and, you know, surprise everyone, and it'll be good to see them do that.
I think the first leg will be a draw, and then Wickham will come away for 1-0 win in the second leg.
You said before, Chris, you're excited to see Akinfenwa in the championship. I was actually thinking, I think Joey Barton as a manager might actually be one of the more interesting feats if we can get Fleetwood up to the second division and some of the headlines. I could imagine him and Marcelo Bielsa on the sidelines if Leeds somehow stay down, that is. But we don't really know what's going to happen just yet. But a number of managers will easily be able to get under his skin. That'll certainly be an interesting affair. Like I said, I think that the way Fleetwood have just stuck with the top. I know both sides have really just hung around that top six all year. But you look back to how they played in their fixture between them, and Fleetwood won with a 10-man outfit. I think that's a great omen to have heading into this fixture. But that was back in February. So, you know, we are going to be into early July by the time this fixture comes around. And I think it's certainly going to be a classic. I think both fixtures between all four sides, whoever goes through is going to be strongly deserving of promotion. But yeah, I'd have to be tipping Fleetwood Town to take out that potential fixture, like I said, coming up Saturday morning, we'll have plenty of news following both legs and the final to be played. I think it's the Tuesday after, I'm not too sure, but there's still some time away. But moving now to the championship, and plenty of action from the week, and particularly at the top, plenty of movement, which we haven't seen for some time. But Brentford, another vital top six clash victory, 1-0 win over West Brom, Leeds' victory over Fulham, ensuring the Bees jump to third on the table. Leeds' victory places them 3 points clear of the Baggies, who sit just 5 points clear above Brentford. So plenty moving in the top third, and even Fulham dropping out to fifth as well. Your Preston North and Chris dropping out of the top six, with a loss to Cardiff, with those Bluebirds jumping into their own position. So plenty of movement in that top six at the moment.
Yeah, there's so much movement, and it was great to see the top four sides coming up against each other. Leeds United, the big winners out of the weekend results. And I think it's that kind of game is the perfect game for Leeds, because they play better when a side takes it up to them. So there's more space for them to attack and to create chances. They don't have a lot of playmaking ability in the team. And when there is space, that's when we see them score the goals. And it was, Fulham could have played with 10 men to start the game, with Alexander Mitrovic fortunate not to get a red card for his elbow on Ben White, which has since been reviewed by the FA, and he's been handed down a 3-game suspension. But Leeds, or just a great result for them, and they played attacking football, and there was a brilliant performance, and it was good to see Pablo Fernandez back on the field after his injury layoff, and he created that third goal for Leeds United, which has put him back up 7 points ahead of third place Brentford.
Yeah, it was a great result for them, a very, very big win. But I'm not 100% convinced they can secure this automatic promotion, given that there's so many games left remaining and within a tight period as well. So there's not a lot of room for rest. But I personally think Brentford, they could be a dark horse for automatic promotion. And either one of Leeds or West Brom could falter and Brentford could overtake them. That's my opinion.
I was thinking, while watching that game, I was thinking, this Leeds side is perfect for the Premier League. They're set up perfectly for the Prem, but not for the Championship, because when they do go back into the Prem, teams aren't going to sit back and defend against Leeds. They're going to take it up to them, which will give them opportunities to score and create in this Bielsa style of football. Whereas the Championship, they're playing against, three quarters of the time, they're playing against sides that are going to park the bus, and that's when they struggle to find avenues to goal.
Yeah, I mentioned it a bit last week. I thought, you know, prior to the Cardiff game, I said that they are a Premier League ready side, but you know, we are going to have to rely on perhaps if they can hold on to Ben White. Brighton have a host of strong centre backs, but he looks a star above at a player of his age.
On the market, he's probably worth 30 mil right now.
Which it's interesting to see. You have players like him who start well. You could get another loan deal, perhaps even into next year. We were seeing. It's playing that role that Dean Henderson did, such a great leadership at someone his age. You don't necessarily want them to just walk to a Premier League opponent, but at the same time, you know that the cash that will be thrown at him might have to end up breaking records. So that'll be interesting one to look at. I think Jack Harrison, if he wants to, and I think he would want to stay at Leeds, I think Manchester City will be happy for him to walk to Allen Road for still a decent fee, I would have thought, but that'll be an interesting one to see. And Pablo Fernandez back in the Premier League at his age, if he is still pulling the strings he does out wide for Sally Bielsa, that'll be fantastic as well. But this weekend, perfect for Leeds, and perfect for Brentford as well. Couldn't have really gone better defeating West Brom and then Fulham dropping to Leeds. But Nottingham as well, push up the table. Really, they still can put a lot of pressure on the top three, top two, and a nice win over Huddersfield. And like I said before, Cardiff moving to sixth place at the expense of Preston after the Bluebirds had that 3-1 victory at Deepdale. So that's massive for them, and plenty of movement at the moment coming in right, even just outside the top six, with a lot of teams now dropping out. And Swansea have been quite disappointing at the moment, and what we've seen from Derby since Wayne Rooney's arrival, probably the best team, I think, as far as points per game are going with since he's come in, has just allowed so much leadership and fluency through the middle of the pitch, out wide, and then back through to some of their star players. And Derby looking really strong as well, but a lot of sides obviously sitting quite hungry outside the top six. Boys, do we still think that it could be a new candidate to come in? Do we think Cardiff can hold on to that top six spot?
I think we will see Cardiff hold on to that top six spot. They're playing really good football, even though it is a long ball football. And who knows, that could cause an upset in the playoffs against the likes of Fulham, who are out of form. Nottingham Forest, who are like a yo-yo team with their form. We're not sure how well they'll play. But actually, I heard an interesting stat about Nottingham Forest today. It's the first time in the past decade that their manager has lasted the year, and he will be managing the following season. So finally, at Nottingham Forest, it's taken a decade, but finally there's a manager there who they're backing to get him back into the Premier League instead of giving him the one season and giving him the flick.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. In the Championship, you almost feel like the likes of Brentford would, on one hand, obviously you want to finish as high as you can, and finishing third gives you the worst of the playoff teams in six. But you almost at this point in time, I think you'd almost want to avoid coming third, because those few teams that are pushing for sixth are probably best form in the league. Aside from Wigan, who are putting together an absolutely sensational run of results. But
second best results since January.
Exactly. They've been incredible. But yeah, looking at Cardiff and Derby and those sort of teams, certainly as soon as the lockdown is finished in the first few weeks back, they've been picking up results. Obviously, the weekend just gone was probably one for Derby and Cardiff, and one where they were able to capitalise on a lot of the rest of the teams, because I think Blackburn lost, Swansea lost, Millwall drew, Bristol lost as well, and obviously Preston losing to Cardiff, Fulham losing to Leeds. So it's a really, really interesting dynamic there going on. And like we've been saying, there's still all the way down to Bristol in 12th, 5 points off Cardiff in sixth. I'm a bit like you, Mitch, with Wickham. I don't rate Cardiff. I think their Premier League season last year was just nothing. It was pointless them even being there. They didn't really offer anything. Going down, Warnock leaving, early doors, I think none of us would have thought they'd be anywhere close to coming back up and challenging for the playoffs there in sixth. Obviously with Neil Harris at the helm, but yeah, I just don't see them offering a major threat to the bigger sides. But again, the same thing can be said with Preston. They've been in terrible form. Derby, again, are very similar to Cardiff. They started the season poorly. Many people were probably thinking that Philip Cocu's days were numbered as manager. So it really is a tough one. I think on paper you'd have to say Preston are the best team out of those. But it is interesting. I wouldn't know who to predict. But again, yeah, if I was to go on paper, I'd put Preston in there. But their form is not doing much to excite anyone at the moment. So it'll be an interesting finish.
I'd have to say. If Derby do manage to find it, finish in the top six and find themselves in the playoffs again, it'll be an absolute massive turnaround. Obviously, fell agonisingly short last year, and then the off-season and early start to their season they had this year with Richard Keogh and a number of players involved in that off-field incident. It's just, yeah, really damaging to the club, and we saw what it did to them. But, yeah, like I said before, since Wayne Rooney's come in, I don't know if it's necessarily him that turned it around or just lifted the club, but... they've really done fantastically well since January, and I think that it's going to be interesting to see how they go. They do play Preston on Thursday. We do have a massive fixture midweek for the championship, so plenty of games to talk about in the next 2 days. And a majority of the sides that play at the moment sit in the top six are playing some of those lower sides. So that'll be very important. A couple of days coming up, and particularly for Derby, I think if they can knock Preston off, leapfrog them, and certainly put pressure on the likes of Cardiff, Fulham, who are looking like a team that could drop out, and then Nottingham Forest as well, I certainly could say we'll look out for Derby, and that would be one of the best turnarounds we've seen for some time in English football.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. And I think I'd rather, as a football lover, I'd rather see Derby in the top six. Playoffs than Cardiff, just knowing that even if they do get promoted, they're going to be more competitive in the Premier League than Cardiff would be. And that's better for the game as a whole, to have Derby County up in the Premier League, a competitive Derby County, not the one that had the record lowest amount of points in 2008 and with Wayne Rooney in the side. And also, how good is it to see Neil Warnock back in the manager position at Middlesbrough? And all week they practice set pieces. That was the first thing that he embedded into the club when he took over. And guess how they scored their first goal? Set piece.
Classic. As soon as that signing was announced, that video of him is it Sheffield United? I've been going around the change room.
Did you see the last dance one?
I don't know if I think of the same thing.
The Sheffield United quotes and that the film Into the Last Dance
with Michael Jordan. Nah, I haven't seen that one. I saw the one that was it was like the polar opposites between him and Pep Guardiola from the City all or nothing season, whereas Pep saying, oh, you know, you boys, you know, I've got so much faith in you, and Warnock's gone around and slapping him over the head and calling him all sorts of names. Great for him to come back in, great for us as football fans for comedic value, for nothing else, but most importantly, a huge win for Borough at the bottom. And certainly they're looking to distance themselves from the bottom. And yeah, Derby, like you guys said, it'd be great to see them back up. And it's been amazing how much of an impact Rooney's made. Obviously, like you said, Mitch, it's difficult to probably pin it all on him. But as soon as he's come in, that's when their fortunes are changed. That can't be all a coincidence. And I think just the fact, purely the effect of rocking up to training, sitting in the changing room, and you look next to, you know, someone like Tom Lawrence, who all those young players like Bennett, etc. The kid who scored the hat trick last week, whose name escapes me. Yeah, Sibley, that's one. Looking over their shoulder, thinking, goodness me, that's Wayne Rooney. You know, he's my teammate, he's my captain now. I think that could only have lifted them. And you hope for their point of view that they can continue that form and get up. But, you know, we've enjoyed the League Two playoffs, League One playoffs are to come, but the Championship playoffs is just going to be a whole nother spectacle, and absolutely cannot wait for that to finish up.
Yeah, but before we also end the show, another manager coming back, Nathan Jones, has been fantastic for Luton. Mm. They play Leeds, though, so that'll be interesting to see just how good his return will be for
the club. They'll beat Leeds.
I certainly hope so. For Brentford's sake, I certainly hope so. But also, our rolling 11 will be posted later. There's also a poll because we do have one spot still remaining. So we'll leave that for the fans and the listeners. So be sure to plug into our Facebook and Twitter feeds for that. But once again, wrapping up a massive show, massive hour, and we do have 7 days of football to come.
Sorry, just to butt in, Mitch, as well. And obviously, on the on the Derby topic, thoughts as well to Andre Wisdom. Not sure if many of our listeners and viewers would have seen, he was subject to a despicable, unprovoked attack. He's in hospital recovering from some stab wounds at the moment. So thoughts out to him, and obviously hope his recovery goes well and he can be back on the pitch.
Absolutely. Well said, Nick. We'll be able to cover everything in the next few days. But yeah, the next 7 days will be action packed, and we'll look to bring that to 12 p.m. next Tuesday, Football Nation Radio. This is the English Football Show. Thank you once again for everyone listening. We'll be back in 7 days' time with much to bring to you.